Welcome to the Sociology in Animals podcast series. This is Dr. Corey Wren. I'm a lecturer in sociology with the University of Kent in Canterbury, England, and I'm the past chair of the Animals and Society section of the American Sociological Association. I'm also the co-founder, along with Dr. Zoe Sutton, of the International Association of Vegan Sociologists. And part of that organization's larger goal is to help normalize vegan studies from a sociological perspective. And so this podcast is helping to bring shape to this burgeoning field and help to demystify some of the work that we're doing, and of course to help build networks. In the first season, we really focused on how to get into the field and how to succeed in the field, and it was really oriented towards students and early career sociologists. In this season, too, what I've done is I've interviewed some of the major thinkers in the field and just asked them to survey, you know, what's going on in the different areas that they're specializing in, and how has veganism or critical animal studies informed that field? What are some of the challenges that they're facing, and so on? So let's get started.
Welcome, Linda Kornbokas. I'm so absolutely thrilled and delighted that you take time on your busy day to join us for this podcast interview. I know you've been all over. I noticed after I invited you to do this, you've been like multiple podcasts.
Yes.
You just did. It's just, you're famous. So why don't you introduce yourself and explain what is the work that you do?
Sure, yeah, thanks very much for having me, Corey. This is a pleasure. I do a bit of everything. I teach sociology at Further Education Scotland, College in Scotland. I am an anthrozoologist officially, about to start my PhD in sociology, and my background undergrad-wise is social psychology, sociology, politics and philosophy. So that's what led me to anthrozoology, which was where I was able to kind of mix all those different disciplines together. And I don't really think I've separated myself from any of them completely yet. So most of the stuff I'm writing about is to do with socialisation of children and how it is that veganism might become the norm one day, or certainly is not purported as the norm so far. So I'm hoping to be studying vegan children in my PhD, what their experiences are like. Meantime, I've been writing mostly about children's TV characters and the dichotomy of, loving animals and then eating the same species of animal at the same time. So that's kind of what I've been focused on.
I think it's really interesting because there is a good bit of work on socialization as far as why kids aren't vegan, but really very little on the reverse. I know Matthew Cole and Kate Stewart had a brief chapter that in their book on children and other animals, and you're sitting with Kate, aren't you?
I will be. Yeah, she's my supervisor. So, and Matthew actually, I've co-opted him, so that's been great.
that's the duo for this topic area.
Absolutely. So yeah, whatever university Kate was at was where I was going to apply. So thankfully they accepted me. So that's good.
Can't wait for whatever you come up with. So why don't you tell us about that field? Because I asked you to talk about to join the podcast for socialization. So can you tell us a little bit? Because unfortunately, you get the big boy like socialization, the most important sociological concept. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about the field as you understand it.
Yeah.
How it has historically understood the importance of other animals.
Yeah, I suppose again, it's the fundamental building blocks of everything that we do, isn't it? So. A lot of the socialization that we are subject to, because it does happen to us rather than us maybe being active in its creation, a lot of it happens even before we're born. And particularly as it relates to animals, whatever a mother ingests in terms of what they eat, their diet during pregnancy, is going to impact upon children. So there's that element of things. There's also the kind of gender socialization that happens as well before you're born. What colour are, what are you having, a boy or a girl, just so people can buy the right colour of things. So there's all that kind of stuff. In terms of the mixed race experience, for me, it's also been what colour will this child maybe be also. I kind of don't want to go too Harry and Meghan on it, but that's the kind of thing, it's a genuine question that people have. And then so much of what we learn happens to us and is ingrained within us. We internalise it before we probably have a chance to really make our minds up because we're too young. So that primary socialisation, that first stage of socialisation, is where things are set, like this is food, this is a pet, this is an this is something we go and see in the zoo, this animal is this, this animal is that. So by the time we get to secondary socialisation, so all these other agents of socialisation that influence us, the media, education and whatnot, we've already got some ideals set within our minds, and that's a lot more difficult to get back out of. So I think it's quite a journey for someone who's been taught anthroparchally, I suppose, to then rage against that and choose a different path. So I'm quite interested in that process. And yeah, Kate and Matthew's work has been great. Other people have dibbled and dabbled in it, and I'm hoping to run with it a little bit further. So
historically, the field of sociology has not really cared too much about
animals,
our relationship with other animals, and how that socializes.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, you're probably going back to maybe people who are a bit more biocentric or ecocentric perhaps, like Albert Schweitzer. So we're going back like forever ago now in terms of sociology, right? Middle of the last century. He was really wanted to encompass all living creatures, but he was seen as a bit of a weirdo on that basis, you know, why wanting to think about plants and stones and rocks and stuff like that. So where I think most people are anthropocentric in their approach, I think sociology has remained in that little bubble. Some of it's maybe been zoo-centric, so that's maybe where anthrozoology came in, where it's like, well, we need to acknowledge there are certain animals that have sentience and intrinsic value, and maybe we need to consider them too, so that they've been kind of put together. But I think we need to go beyond that to be able to encompass all living beings, really. But then where do you stop? And that's a lot of the where people draw the line is the problem. So do you stop at rocks and trees, or do you draw the line at something that can move, and is that enough? And what if it's, you know, plants technically move when they grow? So there's all these different elements of this. I'm not really sure what most people would say. But yeah, sociology's traditionally ignored it most of the time, even though it's dealt with inequality. And yet, this is the ultimate inequality, where a group of any individuals are oppressed and exploited by humans, right? So, I don't know if I've answered your question, Corey.
But that just making me come up with lots more questions, like why aren't animals included? Can't animals also be social? So first, you highlighted, the inequality issue. Sociologists are worth their weight in salt. We should be paying attention to the relationship with other animals, just due to inequality. But even just going back to the foundations of sociology, why would we not include non-human animals? Although it's pretty obvious that animals too can be socialized, just like humans can be. So why, right. And what species do we recognize socialization? Which ones do we not? So I would not even think that cows and chickens and pigs can be socialized, which of course they can.
Of course they can, yeah. I mean, and really any mammal, especially a pack mammal in particular, goes through the socialization process. And those people have been looking at this stuff for years. Jane Goodall's been studying this stuff for decades. So, yeah, I don't know why it is that we seem to think that we are particularly special, or sociology is kept out, especially... C. Wright Mills, the whole promise of sociology was to make changes and to push things forward and make social change and make things more equal. But I don't know that he was explicit about that being human-centric, and yet it's become that. But then perhaps that's just the nature of academia and how it's been so far. You know, it has all been about people focusing on themselves in relation to someone else, perhaps, but that someone not being a non-human animal.
So Kay Peggs has said that one of the reasons she suspects animals are left out is because right when sociology was forming as a discipline, folks like Max Weber were interested in, he was very critical of objectivity. He says, all science is subjective to a degree.
Right.
Then non-human animals have no subjectivity, so therefore they're not critical.
Yeah, it's interesting. I know. There's a paper, Melanie Joy and... Oh, I've forgotten. There's a paper recently been about challenging that, and this idea that we somehow you can't have facts with values. Maybe it's Mark Beckhoff, I forget. You can't have factual information, and also, you know, as soon as you put values into it, it's no longer scientific. And yet values are the things that drive most people's behaviour. So if you're studying human behaviour, and yeah, I mean, Weber was great with that. You know, you've got to actually take that on board. Where is this person's perspective? Where are they coming from? And yet, and I think maybe also animals and caring and being compassionate is seen as a particularly left-wing thing, isn't it? There's this kind of political bent that, oh, well, they're all a bunch of bunny huggers and stuff. I'm quite happy being called a bunny hugger. I have a T-shirt with that blazoned on it. Quite happy to. But yeah, there's this it seems to be pitted against each other. It's like it's some kind of in opposition when actually it's the same thing.
It seems like a lot of this also has to do with this stereotype that other animals can't have culture. Because of course socialization and culture go hand in hand. But yeah. Aren't sociologists being socialized by this academic culture?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I think this is where critical animal studies and where vegan sociology, which by its very nature is going to be critical, I think that's where that's bridging the divide between academia and activism, because you can be an activist academic. It's expected, actually, in many circles, but that's still opposed or maybe resisted by some institutions, perhaps. But then we're back to anthroparchy and the issues there, aren't we? So, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting that sociology departments, and I'm not thinking of any in particular, but I know the stuff that I'm expected to teach doesn't even remotely consider alternative perspectives. It's still that classical Marx, Durkheim, Weber trilogy kind of thing, and there doesn't seem to be much scope unless you start to apply that stuff to particular issues. And yet it's all about inequality, and it's supposed to be about fairness and justice, social justice, and yet it's like there's a boundary beyond which you're expected to stay within, you know. So I just find it really interesting that the very discipline that's designed or was invented, if you like, to challenge all this stuff is one of the few that manages to do so. Yeah.
One of the questions I had here was, you know, how has the field been challenged or advanced by critical animal studies? And even just listening to your response there, you know, for people who are new to sociology or going to go off and do their PhD or whatever in sociology, this is what we're taught. Like, this is the canon. This is what you must learn, Marx, Weber, Durkheim, and, you know, maybe Dubois. What we do know is there's been quite a lot of pushback from the critical feminist sociologists who that's the position, you know, we might hope to be in one day, is that maybe textbooks or module outlines and syllabi will one day have a critical animal studies kind of pushback, just like now it's becoming much more normal to see the critical race or the gender pushback. So do
absolutely.
You think that critical animal studies could fit in there some way?
I don't see why not. It seems to be almost a given that it should. I'm involved in an anti-racist curriculum project here in Scotland at the moment, you know, decolonising the curriculum. And people are only just getting round to that, though.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't hold out massive amounts of hope that it's going to happen soon. If we're still talking about why all the educational books we give, particularly primary school children, have mostly white characters in them in 2021. So, yeah, it's maybe going to take some time, but perhaps that's going to, you know, these movements are, sometimes they gather momentum and they gather other ones up on the way. I think it's one and the same thing. People are now accepting intersectionality as a genuine and an appropriate way of looking at things, rather than, oh, well, you're looking at race, you're looking at gender, you're looking at disability, it is all about social justice. So I don't see why it can't all happen at once, just for everyone doing their bit. However, that's very idealistic of me, I think.
Well, we're definitely getting meta level here when we're talking about the socialization of sociologists field of sociology. But anyway, yeah, so let me get back to socialization, but that fascinates me because really at the heart of it, when we're talking about how we do sociology, we are products of that socialization is worth unpacking.
Yeah.
So let me ask you then, what do you think, coming back to socialization as a field, what's on the horizon? What in your field of critical animal studies and socialization? I think we kind of hinted at it at the beginning when I'm not aware that there's much information out there about socializing veganism. It's usually about the reverse, of socializing non-veganism. But right. Is there more on that or other stuff that you're aware of as an expert in that?
It's interesting. I wrote a piece recently. I'm finding it very difficult to access a lot of current research because I am at the moment between university courses, so I find it quite difficult to access anything that's brand new. But there is a shift towards recognising it's more about identity politics than anything else, and social identity formation, and looking at what is important about someone's identity and how to go about challenging elements of it, particularly if they're carnists or meat eaters. Why is there so much resistance to change there? And that might be useful to investigate, certainly. That's what I'm planning to look at in terms of vegan children. I imagine as well, most of the children that I'll study that are vegan are likely to have been vegan since quite young because of the age of them. So, it's no different. The process is the same. Whatever you're socialising someone into, and I know when I wrote it in my paper about getting a bit of stick for, you know, raising vegan children and forcing views on them, but that's what everyone does. So I think until people can maybe realise that parents do what they think is best, and that if, as is being evidenced now, plant-based food, not maybe talking about veganism as an ethic, but plant-based food as a practice, is healthy, healthful, has all the nutrients that are required, provides people with as much energy as before, might help fight the obesity crisis that we have going on with young people and older people, especially after the COVID pandemic when everybody's sitting on their backside eating crisps all day like I do. So there's a whole bunch of stuff there that I think... I think it is more normalised now. Veganism is certainly much more acceptable now than even just a few years ago. I've been vegan for 22 years, and at the beginning, people didn't even know what it was. And I think then it shifted to being how vegetarian used to be. So people go, oh, they're a little bit of cuckoo, you know, a little bit not quite right or whatever. And then it shifted again, and now people at least know what a vegan is, even if they don't subscribe to the ethic. And now we have a division that we have to make between veganism as an ethical way of life and a plant-based diet, whereas they were one and the same before. So that's even a shift that I didn't see happening in my lifetime.
Well, given then that this new kind of world we're living in, and we're talking about socialization, you've been emphasizing quite a lot about that primary socialization through parents, but there's multiple agents of socialization.
True.
So what's it like for parents, vegan parents with vegan kids, when they have to basically go up against other agents of socialization that are trying to teach kids another route?
Well, that's one of the purposes of the study I'm hoping to be able to do. You know, we talk about the United Nations Rights of the Child and in Scotland, I don't know if it's UK-wide, GRFEC, which is getting it right for every child and accepting that difference shouldn't matter. Making sure that children are included and feel, you know, diversity shouldn't actually, we shouldn't even be bothering about how many of what kind of this kind of person have we got. So what I'm hoping to do with the study is to evidence what it's like to be a vegan child in these areas of socialisation. I mean, when you're, you know, when you're watching TV, when you're at the doctor's and somebody's kind of asking your mother about where you're getting your protein from. Have been there, done that, right? When you're in school and they want to use feathers and craft or they want to take you to a city farm or they're doing these butterfly, get these butterfly kits, you know, so it's just, what's it like to be the kid in the room that's sitting watching that going, this is, something's not right. So by recording the experiences of these children, I'm hoping to then use that to help to influence the practices that are happening in these places. That's the idea.
It's going to be so important. It's just really fascinating what you're doing.
Because until the socialisation itself is different, you know, until there's different books and different discussions about even philosophy for children, I'm a big fan of that too, you know, just getting children to be critical and to go, right, okay, well, what might be wrong with this, and how might that animal feel about the fact that I've done this, or that someone else has done that. So that stuff's all missing because nobody wants to deal with the consequences of upset children, perhaps, right? So yeah, I mean, I think we have to challenge it. That's my plan anyway. Whether I'm successful or not remains to be seen, but everything helps. I think everything has its place.
If you could give one study for folks who want to learn more about socialization and veganism, what would it be?
I think it has to be
Pig Paradox, maybe?
Oh, the Peppa Pig Paradox. It's funny you mentioned that.
I had to plug for your new
Oh, my own one. I mean, fuck, it didn't come to my mind.
Another one.
Yeah, that's the Peppa Pig Paradox, that's available in the Journal of Critical Animal Studies for free. You can just go download the PDF. There's also a link to it through the International Association of Vegan Sociologists, which is handy. That paper really looks at the oddity of Peppa Pig loving children who also eat ham sandwiches sometimes while watching Peppa Pig, which is just bizarre. So there's some reference to other animals as well who suffer that kind of fate, Timmy Time being one, that's a little lamb, and you know, or people go to the city farm and take their kids to feed the lambs out of little bottles and then take them home for their Easter Sunday lunch, and Easter was just not long ago, and they're eating a lamb, and you're thinking, okay, they were cooing, and you know, and so it's just to get people to stop and go, do you know what? I didn't even give that a thought. I never gave that a thought when I was younger. I was raised eating meat, and I loved cows and I ate cows, and I said recently, I don't even think I realised I could challenge it. That's just food. You just eat it. That's what you do. So that paper certainly covers a lot of ground and different kind of reasons behind, including socialisation, obviously, how that comes to be. And also, I think, in terms of children, because I do think that that's, without, you know, starting to sing a Michael Jackson song or something, that is the future, right? So you've got to start at the beginning, and kids are great now. They're being taught a lot in school about environmentalism, and I don't see why that can't be extended further to include this stuff. So Kate Stewart and Matthew Cole's work, most of it relates to socialisation of children as well. It's great. And then there's the likes of Melanie Joy's book as well. Hal Herzog, all these people looking at why do we say that we love animals and at the same time eat them. So the Peppa Pig Paradox is an extension of the Meat Paradox, which looked at that more widely before. So, yeah, that would be my recommendation. Thanks, Corey.
Okay, so, all right, more advice for me, please, for folks who are listening to this and are just really jazzed because it's such an exciting topic area. Where would you say to go? Like, what should they check out? What spaces or conferences or websites?
There's so much, isn't there? This is the difficulty. It depends on the part of your interest, I suppose. Certainly without being I am biased, so the International Association of Vegan Sociology, I would recommend vegansociology.com. We have the second annual conference is going to be coming up later on, but there's so much free, especially with COVID. This has been the joy of COVID, if there is anything, is that attending conferences and talks and speakers, you know, listen to people that otherwise you would never be able to. I've been a member of the Vegan Society for more than 20 years, and last year I was able to go to the AGM for the first time, because I think more of it does need to be accessible for everyone. Go Vegan World, Go Vegan Scotland, all these different organisations are fantastic. The work they're doing is great. Animal Aid and all the usual kind of suspects. So I definitely... Or you can email me and I'll be happy to point you in the direction of where you'd like to go.
Yeah, and the other tricky part is that when we're talking about socialization is that other fields dip a toe, like you mentioned Melanie Joy, and I was just thinking, my colleague Christoph Daunt just put out a book called Why We Love Some Animals. And,
yes, yeah, him and Gordon Hodgson, isn't it? Yeah.
They've done a lot on childhood socialization as well, but the difference is for people who are like, well, what's the difference, is that sociology, we try to explain why, whereas in social psychology, they're just trying to track like the changes. Like they've been doing a lot of presentations recently because Christoph runs a similar program to the vegan sociology group that I do.
Yeah.
And they do lots of people who are like, all right, when does this happen? And it seems like when kids hit about the age of 10, all those innate empathetic feelings about other animals start to erode, and they erode really, really quickly. So that's what psychology is doing. Psychology is measuring when this stuff actually happens.
Yeah.
State of fit, and then sociologists become in with the qualitative, because it's a complex. Yeah.
And it's interesting, though, age 10 is an interesting time because you're just, you know, heading towards high school in a year or two. Peers start to be a lot more influential, the media. Yeah. So although that's the age it happens, it's not because of some biological process, I don't think. You do become a lot more self-centered in your teenage years anyway, and I think that's a hormonal thing. Everything's, I mean, that certainly was. Everything was about me when I was 13. I was like, the world revolves around me and everything else has to. It's interesting. So, yeah, it's the detail, that why is one, or when is one thing, why is another thing? And that's what sociology is really trying to do, is tease out the power relations between non-human animals and human animals, and then within humankind, you know, with, you know, who's big pharma and, you know, all these food and dairy industries that make masses of amounts of money, and then big pharma benefits from that ultimately with the disease that these things can contribute to. So
how would you define vegan sociology then? What we do here together?
What we're trying to do is to challenge the status quo.
Yeah.
To upset some apple carts. Although that would be vegan, wouldn't it? So maybe we don't want to upset an apple cart. Maybe we want to upset
the egg cart. The tagline of the website,
vegan upsetting sociology. The egg carton. Yeah, I think it's our job to fulfil the promise of sociology that Mills said that it might hold. So, which is the theme for the conference as well, which is magnificent. I think it's our job to be, you know, people are talking a lot about allyship just now, you know, with other groups, with oppressed groups, human groups. And I think that sociology's job is to be an ally for non-humans too.
Thanks for listening to Sociology and Animals. I hope you found it helpful and informative. If you want to learn more about the sociological study of society and animals, you can check out the website of the Animals and Society section of the American Sociological Association or my own website at coreylebrin.com. You can also check out the International Association for Vegan Sociologists, and the website for that is vegansociology.com. Feedback and suggestions can be submitted to myself at coreyrenn@gmail.com. That's coreywrenn@gmail.com. If you liked this episode, be sure to share the series with others. The music for this podcast was provided by Ode to Sleep, a band local to where I live, here in East Kent, England. Ode to Sleep explores various topics with their music, including human and animal rights, environmental issues, equality, and mental health. Until next time, this is Dr. Corey Wren signing off. All the best.